Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome to Awaken Us. First, I would like to give thanks to the Creator that leads, guides, and directs us in all things. My journey has turned into an eye-opening awakening, and I am here to share that awakening with you. This podcast will explore who are we? What are the differences between a person and a son? What is our purpose? Why do we hold certain beliefs? Why do we tend to see ourselves and others in a certain way? Why do we act the way we do towards ourselves and others? And what does any of this have to do with the events we experience in our world daily? I would also like to thank every one of you for your support that you're giving me, my meetup friends, my LinkedIn connections, my Twitter friends, Facebook friends, Goodreads friends, and many more. Thank you for your emails, your text messages, and your kind words. During this podcast, I will read from my book, He Lives, A Living Testimony, second edition, with added preface and edited back cover. Every 3 months, I give away three of my books through my website, www.awaken-us.org. You can click the link to enter and win. The giveaway starts this month, and the winners will be announced once a month. I am promoting a message, not just selling a book. It will be a gift that will keep on giving. And as always, I do invite you to visit my website for all information on upcoming events, studies, videos, bookings, and news. The Awaken Us platform will air researchers that address our collective human experiences, both good and evil. The natural laws versus man's law. Did we break the first commandment of God when we took on a false identity from birth? Do we really own anything on this earth? Do we have free will? And words. How many meanings can a word have, and what words have we learned that keeps us in bondage, slavery? So stay tuned in for all of our studies, then show yourself approved. Tonight on Awaken Us, I will read from my book, He Lives, A Living Testimony, second edition, with added preface and edited back cover. And this month, I will be airing a pre-recorded presentation called The Confusion Programs by Servant King, presented by Marcus. Marcus' website, www.servantking.info.com. This presentation will reveal things you are not supposed to know, give you knowledge that is not government approved, expose things that are deliberately concealed, unmask the illusion and fraud of deceivers, teach you how the oldest trick in the book is done, prove how you have been swindled, and who the thief is will shock you. You will be amazed by the everyday realities you practice and unbelievable discoveries hidden in plain sight. Your long-held beliefs will be shattered and replaced with confirmed knowledge. And of course, you will obtain your reward if you can renew your mind. We have all abandoned our real birthright for an abstract birth certificate. Confusion of mind, being, voice, faith, law, things, money, and God. Again, I would like to bring some understanding about the nature of the problem so that we can go to work on solving them. We recognize many of the problems humanity faces, but we do not understand the nature cause of our problems. There are root core causal factors why we are experiencing suffering in the world. We need some basic information about the nature of the problem to begin talking about the solution to these problems. These root core causal factors is about creating a positive change in your world. It is about the great work. It's about what we care about. Care is the generative principle of the heart. Knowing the true difference between right and wrong behavior. Knowing these causal factors is not just about your awakening, but about taking action in the process of informing others. It's about being involved in the awakening process of others. You are not here just for your happiness. We are the voice of truth. Courage is a must. Seek truth and speak truth. Last but not least, waking up does not equate to perfection. The great work requires time and persistence. Never give up. Truth, love, and freedom is worth fighting for. I will continue to speak on the root causal factors of our suffering for weeks to come in order to uplift, inspire, and inform the human consciousness of us all. You can listen to all of my podcasts from my main website, awaken-us.org. Reviews and comments can be emailed to us at awakenus@yahoo.com. Hold on, I'll be right back. Dismissing myths and strongholds, one mind at a time.
For immediate release, learning our part in the Creator's plan. He Lives, a Living Testimony, has been published by Outskirts Press. Outskirts Press announces the latest version of the highly anticipated, motivational, and inspirational self-help book from Decatur, Georgia, published by writer Sharon Pelham. Mrs. Pelham's most recent book to date was revised in March 2019 with added preface and edited back cover. This revised 5x8 paperback book is available worldwide on book retailer websites such as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The webpage at www.awakeus.org was updated simultaneously with the book's publication relaunching.
Gods over ourselves. Our legal system supersedes the will of our Creator, the natural laws. Men became sun worshipers. They saw the sun by day and the stars and moon by night. They felt the warmth of the sun by day and the cold in the darkness they named night. They began to study what they were given by the Creator to see, the heavens and the earth, and made up the rest. The first study of the heavens was called astrotheology, which is the study of the zodiac. This theory defines our days, months, and years. They named our seasons spring, summer, winter, and fall, and define the birth, the new day, noonday, the highest point of the day, and the fall and winter, the dying and death of life. From this, my friends, we get the story of Jesus Christ. The sun, the S-U-N, is the morning star, the beginning and the end, the first and the last, our hope, our Savior, our giver of life. The I Am, the one who took the fall, the risen King. Without it, we would die. These events go on in the heavens daily as the sun rises and eventually sets. The Jesus myth is told by many religions, although they use different names. Biblical scholars controversially believe that these claims have been directly stolen or heavily influenced by stories of other ancient deities. The Egyptians have Orias, the Greeks Dionysus, the Romans have Mithras, the Jews have the Messiah, and the Christians have Jesus. Christianity took over shortly thereafter, with its myths and strongholds destroying a lot of documents of old and hiding the rest for their use. So there you have it. Do your homework. You must do the work. Preface, Part 6. What's on your mind? Let's take it to the word. Call me. Dow 516-531-9476. All callers are screened prior to airing. What is a servant king? A servant king is the birthright of every man from the moment of his first breath until his natural death. Birthright is a term not much used in our vocabulary today. Most people would equate it with some royal lineage or maybe their right to citizenship. This is our birthright that holds our inheritance, which in turn holds all of our power, property, rights, and duties, and is our single most valuable possession. Unfortunately and unwittingly, we have all been deceived into abandoning our birthright in order to assume a graven identity. This presentation does not contain Marcus' opinions or what he believes to be true, only that is really happening in our everyday lives. During Marcus' quest, he made many discoveries that are not only unbelievable, but apparently are real, true, and happening. He learned that belief is only the lack of knowledge, a poor and foolish substitute for the truth. Belief stands opposed to knowledge. The concepts explained in the presentations affects everyone, the people of every nation on earth. Some of these concepts are easy to see once they are exposed, but some are very difficult to grasp. There is a subtlety to them. Right now, these concepts are foreign and alien to your way of thinking. These concepts will require you to think like you have never thought before.
The Living Testimony is 50 pages in length and is being aggressively promoted to appropriate markets with a focus in the motivational and inspirational self-help category. With U.S. wholesale distribution through Ingram and Baker & Taylor and pervasive online availability through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and elsewhere, He Lives the Living Testimony meets consumer demand through both retail and library markets with a suggested retail price of $12.95. Additionally, He Lives the Living Testimony can be ordered by retailers or wholesalers for the maximum trade discount price set by the author in quantities of 10 or more from the Outskirts Press Direct Bookstore at www.outskirtspress.com/bookstore. For more information or to contact the author, visit www.awakeus.org.
Hi, my name is Marcus, and welcome to Servant King. This confusion program is called God, Confusion of God. Now, this will be a shorter program, because we really don't know much about God. Unless, of course, we make up stuff, which a lot of people seem to do. You will recall, when I first started trying to figure out things, I was having a hard time with words. I was finding that words mean this or that, and in law, it would mean something else. I also kept seeing the word God being used in all these legal and constitutional documents, and politicians talking about God in their speeches. I see that politicians are making oaths that end with, "So help me God." People in court say, "I will tell the truth, so help me God." Our Queen claims to rule over us by the grace of God. And I'm thinking, what does God have to do with the law? Law is made in the legislature or Congress, the House of Commons or the House of Representatives. Laws are an act of Parliament or an act of Congress. I know for certain that God doesn't live there. That's the people's house. That's not God's house. Everybody knows God lives in church. I was born into a Roman Catholic family, and I know exactly where he lives. He lives in the tabernacle. Yeah, tabernacle. The priest told me he lives in there. He showed it to me. It's about this big. There's a door on the front. There's a key. And I never got the key, so I never got to open it. So I don't know what God looks like, but he's in there. So he can't be very big. As I was having a look at the law, here are the places I found God in the law. Yes, I found God. Now, because of what I know today, I can't help but make some comments. I know I said I would give no opinions or what I believe to be true or anything like that, but when you see blatant hypocrisies, I have to make a comment here or there on it, so I hope you will indulge me in that. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, 1982, is part of the Constitution. It says, the very first sentence says, whereas Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. So, God is the highest in Canada. Nothing higher, supreme, most high. The Canadian Bill of Rights, written in 1960, the Parliament of Canada, affirming that the Canadian nation is founded upon principles that acknowledge the supremacy of God and the dignity and worth of the human person and the position of family in a society of free men and free institutions. Affirming also that men and institutions remain free only when freedom is founded upon respect for moral and spiritual values and the rule of law. Well, strange, don't you think? Because I read on the Justice Canada website that courts don't deal with moral laws or morality. Then, on all Canadian money coins is engraved Dea Gratia Regina, which is Latin for, by the grace of God, Queen. So our Queen is Queen by the grace of God. This woman becomes a Queen by the grace of God. I heard people in court say, "So help me God," or "So help you God." That's the formula at the end of a common oath as administered to a witness who testifies in chief. So God helps the chief, I guess. The divine right of kings, or divine right theory of kingship, is a political and religious doctrine of royal and political legitimacy. It asserts that a monarch is subject to no earthly authority, deriving his rule or his right to rule directly from the will of God. Now, I don't know why atheists obey the Queen of Canada when she's God's representative here on earth. Don't believe in God? Well, then don't obey the Queen. Just hypocrisy, I guess, or they're just confused. I don't know which. In the U.S., I came across a phrase that said, "One nation under God, with liberty and justice for all." That's right after they pledged allegiance to the flag. They didn't pledge allegiance to God. But they said, "We're under God." I also heard one night on CNN something about somebody or some place obeying the law of God. And she said, there's a lady anchor on CNN. She says, "We don't want to descend into a theocracy. This means we don't want to go down to where God is or even get underneath him. descend to a theocracy. I thought, that's strange. In the U.S., I saw "In God We Trust" on paper money and engraved on numerous government buildings, on the wall in many courtrooms, "In God We Trust." Strange to put "In God We Trust" on money when God says the love of money is the root of all evil. And if "In God We Trust," that would make us a trustee of God. Of God. When was the last time the IRS agent said, excuse me, "God sent me and I'm here to examine or audit the trust"? So it can't be that God. I heard a song sung, says, "God Bless America," sung by Americans. Even the lawmakers sing that song. There's a line in there that says, "Stand beside me to guide me." Well, that's not under God. That's your buddy standing beside you. So I guess you're even with God. I heard an army motto that said, "God, country, duty." God, country, duty. I saw in the U.S. Declaration of Independence that man was created by a creator. And it said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." That means nobody needs to explain this to you. It's self-evident. That all men are created equal. That they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. What happened to property? Well, take your property, now you can be happy. Pursue your happiness after we take your property. Pursuit of happiness. First time I heard that, I thought, that's stupid. Why don't you just say we have the right to life, liberty, and the right to a haircut, or the right to a funeral? I mean, pursuit of happiness? What does that mean? And that statement can't be exactly right either, because the government-approved education curriculum does not teach these self-evident truths. Yet the Constitution says they're self-evident. It should say that all men evolved equally and are endowed as the most evolved animal with certain unalienable rights. That would be correct, according to the education program. I just wanted to correct that. By Article 1... of the amendments to the Constitution of the United States, it is provided that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. In the United States, therefore, everyone is allowed to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience. So let's see what religion means. It means to rebind. It comes from the Latin ligio, which means to bind, a ligament. Re means again or anew. So to rebind to something. In essence, it means to hold or bind or bond yourself to something new, to become something new or move from one state to another, to be part of something by binding to it. In other words, you have to hold it. You have to hold on to it. When you bind to something, you become part of the thing. It is the bond that holds you in place. So, religion, as defined by Webster in 19th, is strictness of fidelity in conforming to any practice as if it were an enjoined rule of conduct. Well, see, that could be anything. Anything could be your religion. So how does the word religion tie in with God? Well, it doesn't. Your local golf club can be your religion if you are a member. Religion just means you are enjoined by a rule of conduct and conform to the practices and so forth. So a religion could involve God or not involve God. Well, it depends what your religion is. Now, no matter what I say for religious people, you'll still believe that religion is a belief in God, but it's not. You could be a member of no religion and still believe or know the truth about God and have no religion. Do it all just by yourself. Where else did I see God in law or government? As you walk up the steps to the building, which houses the U.S. Supreme Court, you can see near the top of the building a row of world's lawgivers, and each one is facing one in the middle that is facing forward with a frontal view. It is Moses, and he is holding the Ten Commandments. This is not God. It's only Moses, but pretty close. I think Moses knew God. as you sit in the courtroom, so that's the U.S. Supreme Court, and you sit in the courtroom, there's the Ten Commandments, a display of the Ten Commandments. They're written by God, from what I understand. Every session of Congress begins with a prayer to God by a paid preacher whose salary has been paid by the taxpayer since 1777. I saw during the Amanda Knox trial in Italy, if you watch that, they had a big crucifix hanging on the wall behind the, I was going to say altar, but whatever, the bench. And I know that's not God, it's only his son, but still pretty close. He was just hanging there dead on the cross. I've seen a Bible in every courtroom. That's supposed to be the word of God. Every session of the Supreme Court begins with these words, God save the United States and this honorable court. So this concept of God is found on money, on buildings, on constitutional documents, etc. With all these references to God, it would appear that God has something to do with the law or justice or something to do with courts or the government. But I cannot find a connection between religion and God. Not based on what religion is, and not based on what law is. But then you hear about the separation of church and state. People think that means separation of religion and state. But it doesn't say that. It can't be the separation of religion and state, because the state decides what your religious freedoms are. And they're not absolute. So they couldn't be from God, because God is the highest and it's absolute. And because the Supreme Court said that the official religion of the U.S. and Canada is secular humanism. Means worldly humans. If the USA or Canada got rid of their religion, what would they practice in court? Because this is the religion. Remember what religion is, strict conformity to the rules of conduct, which is law. This is what they practice in court. So what does the law say about God or define God as? From various law books, I got this. God, from the Saxon God, the source of all good, the supreme being. Every man is presumed to believe in God. He who opposes a witness on the grounds of his unbelief is bound to prove it. So the law says you do not have to prove God exists, but he who opposes the existence must prove it. This is the law. So don't confuse law with other things, religion and what you would call science and or whatever. This is the law, okay? Blasphemy against the Almighty by denying his being or providence was an offense punishable at common law by fine and imprisonment or other infamous corporal punishment. Now, the common law is an unwritten law, so that law is still in force and effect now. Common law. God, according to the best efforts of linguists and researchers, the root of the present word God is the Sanskrit word hu, which means to call upon, invoke, implore. Sort of like when you say, oh my God, you're invoking God. So God is the invoked one, cited as an authority or resort to. God, the supernatural being, these are definitions I found, good ones. The supernatural being conceived as the perfect and omnipotent and omniscient originator and ruler of the universe, the object of worship. Worship means to obey, to show great reverence for love. So God, the supreme being, the eternal and infinite spirit, the creator and the sovereign of the universe. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. So the book of John. God, any supernatural being worshipped as controlling some part of the world or some aspect of life, or who is the personification of a force. I don't know if I agree with all that, but there it is. So based on all the above, I'm getting a clearer concept of God. What is God? Well, it's a supreme being. That's it. That's it, God. Nothing higher. Supreme being. But to be a God, you must be a creator, a lawmaker, a judge, a sovereign. So in other words, a God must create something, make some rules for the things he created, and use those rules to govern the things he created. That is basically what God is. So if you're ever interviewing for a God, so that you can make God be who you want God to be, make sure he has on his resume these things, and maybe even have him create something while he's at the interview. So with all this in mind now, what can we say God is? We use many words for supreme beings. It all depends on what we are referring to as its supreme being. A supreme being can be a master, a king, a chief, president, emperor, monarch, father, chairman, mayor, premier, judge, creator, lord, maker, head, crown, God. There are also supreme beings of something. We call the mayor of a city your worship. Nobody higher in the city, supreme being. We call justices of peace your worship. We call judges your honor or my lord. We call the man who wrote our constitution our founding father. And on it goes. These are all supreme beings of something. I also learned that law comes from a sovereign, a God power. That would now make sense. So what is a sovereign? Again, from the law books, a sovereign is a supreme lord or ruler, one who possesses the highest authority without control. That's a sovereign. A chief ruler with supreme power, one possessing sovereignty. In the United States, the sovereignty resides in the body of the people. In Canada, sovereignty resides in the Queen. Sources of the law. By this expression, it is understood the authority from which the law derives its force. So in the U.S. and Canada, the power of making all laws is in the people or their representatives, and none can have any force whatever which is derived from any other source. There's no other source of law in those countries, or any country, I guess. So God's not in the country. He's either above it, below it, but he's not in it. He's been replaced, that's for certain. Okay, now it's becoming clear. Now I understand the separation of church and state. The God of the U.S. and the God of Canada stated in documents cannot be the God religious people think of as God. It's not possible. Under religious freedom rights, man decides if you can obey the law of God. What? You decide if someone else can obey the law of God. Well, that puts you higher than God, doesn't it? So, wow, that doesn't only make you a God, but it puts you higher than God. What a revelation. So what's my conclusion? Well, it's the only simple conclusion. So in our legal system, God can only be man himself acting as God. There is nobody here on earth but us people.
With Mark.
Now, let's see if anybody agrees with me that studies law, who studies God and law. Well, I found someone. The Godless Constitution was written by two professors of government and history at Cornell University. Isaac Kramnik and R. Lawrence Moore have spent their careers studying religion in American life. Some quotes from their book. They didn't just spend a semester on this to get their doctorate degrees. No, they spent their whole careers on this. So these guys obviously know something. It says the preamble of the Constitution, let's see if I can go here. The preamble of the Constitution invokes the people of the United States. It does not invoke any sort of God. The Constitution forbids any religious test to hold office. A godless person is just as eligible as a godly one. Well, I'm not sure if these guys understand the difference between religion and God, but the original model of the United States was secular. E pluribus unum. It's on all your American coins. If you look at any American coins, it's E pluribus unum on all of them. Which means one from many, or one from many parts, or out of many, we are one. Of course, my little bit of religious training, younger days, I learned the opposite. It was out of one, we are many. So everything's just backwards, upside down, exactly opposite. These guys also had this letter, and this was interesting. It was written by John Adams to Thomas Jefferson. I think that's from the Adams family. I don't know. I heard he's one of the founding fathers. But and what did he write? I don't know if you can read that or not, but I'll read it for you. It says, "The United States of America have exhibited perhaps the first example of governments erected on the simple principles of nature. And if men are now sufficiently enlightened to disabuse themselves of artifice, imposture, hypocrisy, and superstition, they will consider this event as an era in their history. Although the detail of the formation of the American governments is at present little known or regarded in Europe or in America, it may hereafter become an object of curiosity. It will never be pretended that any persons employed in that service had interviews with the gods, or were in any degree under the influence of heaven, more than those that work upon ships or houses, or labor in merchandise or agriculture. It will forever be acknowledged that these governments were contrived merely by the use of reason and the senses." Wow. I thought you said in God we trust. I thought you said you were a nation under God. 13 governments of the original states, thus founded on the natural authority of the people alone, without a pretense of miracle or mystery, and which are destined to spread over the north part of the whole quarter of the globe and are a great point gained in the favor of the rights of man. What happened to the supremacy of God? Let us look now at what Canadian law professors from university law schools say about the supremacy of God. These are all quotes. There's so many of them in these articles, I couldn't put them all here. I'd be here for a long time. These are all quotes from chief justices of the Supreme Court, of federal courts, provincial courts, courts of appeal, constitutional law scholars, law professors, politicians, scholars in constitutional law. There is no source of thinking or authority on this topic that's any higher. And this one article was called "The Embarrassing Preamble, Understanding the Supremacy of God." Now, I'm going to read this as if there is a God. Why? Because the Constitution says there is. Do I know if there is a God? It doesn't matter what I think. The Constitution says there is. And the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. This is the law. So it doesn't matter what I think. Starts off and it says, "At the outset of Canada's most venerated human rights document, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is a short but profound declaration. Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. This reference to the supremacy of God and the rule of law, of course, appears in the preamble, the part of the Constitution that the Supreme Court of Canada has called the Grand Entrance Hall to the Castle of the Constitution. Excuse me. Wherein the political theory which the Act embodies is found. Accordingly, the rule of law has played a rather remarkable role in the jurisprudence of the courts, most noticeably the Supreme Court. It has been called a fundamental postulate of our constitutional structure, a notion that comprises indispensable elements of civilized life and a principle with profound constitutional and political significance. In stark contrast, the supremacy of God has suffered a much different fate. As recently noted by Professor Lawrence Sawson, the reference to the supremacy of God in the preamble, herein after referred to as the Supremacy of God Clause, has been almost entirely ignored by the Supreme Court of Canada. Further, the few times it has received attention from the courts and academics, it has been consistently marginalized. For Professor Peter Hogg, he's a constitutional law expert, the Supremacy of God Clause provides little assistance in understanding the Constitution. For Professor Dale Gibson, its value is to be seriously doubted. And to others, it is a contradiction, a dead letter stemming from inglorious origins. And to Justice Bertha Wilson, the clause is possibly in conflict with values of a free and democratic society. So, saying that God is supreme is embarrassing, marginalized, should be ignored, was in conflict with the rule of law. Peter W. Hogg said, it's difficult to see what aid can be derived from it. No aid to us. David M. Brown says, God and democracy stand opposed to each other. He's saying God opposes democracy. Democracy opposes God. They're opposites. It goes on to say, because they were embarrassed about the implications of its proper interpretation, talking about the supremacy of God clause. If somebody actually took the proper interpretation of this, the implications would be embarrassing. Goes on, an embarrassment to be ignored ought to be removed. The supremacy of God clause has received a silent treatment both from academics and the courts, in particular the Supreme Court of Canada. The supremacy of God clause has been moved to the sidelines of constitutional adjudication, especially holding that it was of no legal import as either an independent source of law or an interpretive aid. No use. Not even as a guidance thing. Law of God, forget it. Not to do with anything. This goes on to say that it conflicted with the values of a free and democratic society. We can't do what we want and be free if we have to obey someone's law. We want to do our own law. It goes on to say Peter Hogg and Dale Gibson, who already noted, have questioned the value of the supremacy of God clause, and you have a recipe for irrelevance. So this clause, very first clause in the constitutional part, is irrelevant. Why put it there? Doesn't make any sense, does it? I ask rhetorically this question. If the preamble creates, because of the words the rule of law, a constitutional foundation for striking down a statute, do the words supremacy of God, which precede these words, also create such a foundation? And how are we to define and apply it? That the supremacy of God could never strike down legislation. God can never strike down what you want to do. Impossible. References to religion in American law and politics, what the United States Supreme Court has called ceremonial deism. That's what your religion is. That's what the Supreme Court calls it. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor found that the reference to God in the Pledge of Allegiance did not violate the Establishment Clause of the U.S. Constitution, which prevents the state from advocating or establishing a religion, because the reference constituted a form of ceremonial deism that had, over time, lost all religious significance. Many commentators believe that such judicial treatment has rendered references to God in law and politics meaningless and irrelevant. She's telling you that your religion means nothing. How do you evangelical Christians feel about that? Nothing to do with the law. It's not only meaningless. Meaningless means nothing. If it meant nothing, that would be something. But it means less than nothing. Meaningless. Furthermore, at the level of Canada's highest court, when the supremacy of God clause is not being denigrated, God in this context is simply out of place. These are all quotes from courts and other things. I told you God doesn't live in Canada. Thus, in the courts, scholarly halls, and the news media, the prevailing opinion is that the supremacy of God clause is of trifling importance. God couldn't even make it into a trivial pursuit. The court invoked the foundational constitutional principle of the rule of law to prevent the chaos that would result if all the laws were immediately ruled invalid. If the preamble to Canada's constitutional text has such a remarkable significance when the rule of law is at issue, at least some significance cannot, without further justification, be denied when the supremacy of God is being construed. Justice Addy stated that the common law has always recognized the supremacy of God. What exactly did Justice Addy mean by this? To what history was he referring? Surely there is some story underlying the supremacy of God clause that remains untold. That's right. I think I might tell it. Chief Justice Lamer wrote, in other words, the constitutional preamble, including the reference to the supremacy of God, is not a source of positive law. Rather, it elucidates other sources of constitutional provisions and rights. What could these other sources of constitutional law be? This is the scholars writing this. The most important rights held by individuals are not derived from Parliament or any other lawmaking branch of the state, but rather from higher or supreme sources. This terrible story tells us that there must be some higher law, some set of rights that no government, no human authority can take away. So, if there is a higher law, it's a terrible story. That a proper understanding of the supremacy of God clause is no more denominational or even religious than modern human rights doctrine. There, now you got Canada's Supreme Court saying the same. What they're telling you is that your religion has nothing to do with God. Why? Because your religion is a person. Your religion is a creature of the state. It's not a creation of God. You believe it is, but not as a matter of law. Only a matter of belief. Nothing to do with the law. Sorry. Here in Canada, when these clauses were put in there, it says, given this assumption about Trudeau's politics, that was the Prime Minister of Canada, Egerton resolved the puzzle by concluding that the inclusion of the Supremacy of God clause was not principled, but rather a political calculation by Trudeau to garner support for the Charter. The House of Commons, on February 17, 1981, on his amendment to add a reference to supremacy of God in the Charter, Epp stated, this was a guy named Jake Epp, the Member of Parliament, what does the Charter do? Where does it start from? This Charter starts from the premise that the government will grant us rights. This is where the Charter starts, and this is where the Charter is wrong. My rights, our rights in this House, the rights of Canadians, are not granted by any government. It is for that reason that we move an amendment, not only because the Right Honorable John Diefenbaker, the then leader of this party and the Prime Minister of this country, had entrenched in the Canadian Bill of Rights, but because the philosophy understanding the Charter was right. What it did say was that every human being created in the image of God has certain inalienable rights. Now, after I read that, I don't know who this Jake Epps is. So I go out on the internet, who's Jake Epps? Now, we know 99% or 90% of all the members of Parliament are lawyers and so forth. And I said, this guy can't be a lawyer. This guy that proposed this amendment, wanted it in there, couldn't be a lawyer. So I looked him up, Jake Epps. He's not a lawyer. He was born into a Mennonite family, and he was a high school teacher. And then he went into politics. No lawyer would ever want to put that in. They're trying to get rid of it now. It ought to be removed. We're embarrassed. Now, here's a couple statements just on law in general. This was written by Cicero in the Republica. There will be but one law, eternal and unchangeable, binding at all times upon all peoples. And there will be, as it were, one common master and ruler of men, namely God, who is the author of this law, its interpreter, and its sponsor. If the rights in the Charter purport to represent, in general, universal and inalienable rights derived from greater sources beyond the state, then the state cannot completely abrogate or take away those rights, no matter how pressing or substantial the state objective is. Put most simply, the state did not bestow it, so it can never take it away. So to sum this up, based on the highest authorities, God, as supreme in our countries, is embarrassing, has inglorious origins. God in our Constitution is a contradiction. God is the Most High, is in conflict with our values of a free and democratic society. God's the top, and we couldn't be doing everything we want to do, huh? Our democracy and God stand opposed to each other. The implications of God and its proper interpretation would be embarrassing. God is an embarrassment to be ignored. This was written These are statements from courts, law scholars, constitutional experts. God ought to be removed. God is supreme, has received a silent treatment from both academics and courts. We should regulate supremacy of God clause to the sideline. God is of no legal import, either an independent source of law or even an interpretive aid. God could never strike down our legislation. References to God and law and politics are meaningless, irrelevant. God's being denigrated by the highest court. God is of trifling importance. Wow. Why is it in the Constitution then? To satisfy this one member of Parliament? No, it's always been in there. Not only in it, but the first sentence. Why is God in pretty well the Constitution of all countries? If it's not in the written Constitution, it's in the verbal Constitution. It's very clear God is irrelevant. No need for it, or is there? No, I'm just a simple man, but I can tell you that if the preamble said, Canada was founded upon the principle that recognizes the supremacy of man as a supreme being and the rule of law, there would be no embarrassment, no conflicts, no one would oppose it, wouldn't be marginalized, wouldn't be ignored, wouldn't be irrelevant, and wouldn't be getting these comments from law experts or courts anymore. The statement would make perfect sense in its meaning and application or use by the courts. Ask any lawyer if any court will take judicial notice of the laws of God, like thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not steal. The answer will be no. Next time you claim some freedom of religion or free religious exercise, remember it's only to practice some ceremonial deism based on your religion, not law. A court cannot rule on any law of God, only the law within its jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with God. I think by the time you go through all these unraveled programs, my unraveled programs, all religious people are going to be a little upset, maybe angry, but you should feel deceived, tricked, and fooled. But don't get mad at your pastors, priests, and ministers. They don't know this either. I don't think they do. They're the same as you. We have to go to something much higher than this to find out who's behind all this. Now, if you think these contradictions cannot be explained just here in Canada, I only use Canada as an example. This deliberate deception is worldwide and has a very good reason. You guessed it. To pull off the greatest swindle ever. You own nothing. Its whole purpose is to steal. Stealing. It's all it's about. Not about money, it's about stealing property. And some of you will still not believe it, but who cares what you believe? Only the ones who care what you believe are those that want to deceive you and take advantage of you. And you are letting it happen. I'm now at the point in my quest where I'm starting to believe what the experts on law are saying, that the Word of God is the highest and final authority on law. But courts can only deal in the law of Canada, not the law of God. But why then is there a Bible in every courtroom? Nobody uses that law. Nobody opens it up to quote it as an authority. They have their own books of authority, this act, that act, and so forth. But they swear on it. They swear on the Bible. So I did some more research. Always best to go back in history to the source of things, to find things. I find out, I was raised Catholic, I find out the Catholics killed millions of people if they had the Bible or tried to read it. Yeah, millions, called the Inquisition. Not only kill them, but kill them in the cruelest way possible. Why would anyone kill someone over a book? So, using my brain again, I'm thinking, what's the big deal? It's just a book. God is supposed to be good and holy and loves us. Makes you wonder. Then I learned the Roman Catholic Church declared it a sin, which means breaking the law, as late as 1962 to read the Bible. Wow. Then I had a look at the Queen of Canada and her coronation. I got every word that was said during her coronation. God is invoked all through it. Well, it must be because she claims she has a right from God. Maybe he sent her a note or something. An apparition, I don't know. At the end, she is given the Bible, which is just called the book, and is told, this is the most valuable thing this world affords. Well, wow, again. She has one-third of the whole world. She has control of one-third of the whole world, or a quarter, whatever she has now. And this book she was given is the most valuable thing this world affords. More than all the big yachts and countries and skyscrapers and gold mines and whatever. This is the most valuable thing the world affords. She was given it. So, using my brain again, I got me the book. They're all over the place now, but nobody ever reads it. And I wonder why. I read what is called the Ten Commandments. A lot of people have heard of that. Now, being a Roman Catholic, I sort of knew them, not really. But there was one I'd never heard of, and it was number 2 in the top 10 list. So I go on the internet and I look up the Catholic Ten Commandments. Sure enough, number 2's not there. It's in the book, but it's not in the Catholic Ten Commandments. So instead, what they did was they deleted the second commandment. They took the 10th commandment, divided it into 2 to make it 9 and 10. So, hey, look, we have 10 commandments still. But number 2 was gone. So, using my brain again, could this be a typing error? Or why was it deleted? I mean, 1/3 of the world is Catholic or something. So putting this all together, I have millions of people being killed in the worst way possible, being told for centuries it's a sin to read it. It is the most valuable thing that the Queen has. And the second commandment is deleted on purpose. So, this second commandment must be really important. Maybe I should find out what it's all about.
If you'd like to talk to me after the show, call in 5 minutes prior to the show ending. Dial 516-531-9476.
Remember, I'm on a quest, and I'm not sure where I'm headed. All I do is I take what is true and put it in one column, and what is believed or opinion and put it in another column. I stop listening to everyone and start thinking for myself. This is the point where the real blessing in disguise began for me. Do you remember, in the introduction video, I told you that much has been done so that you will not find the answer. And I said that if you do find it, much has been done to be sure you will reject it. Well, we're at that point. Remember when I said, what does God have to do with the law? I'm over 50 years old, and I never read it. I only knew one guy who'd read it, and he was a peculiar man. So first, someone wanted to be sure you do not know what is in this book. They used to kill you for that. Then it's translated into Latin, and the priests will tell you what is in it. Then the book finally gets printed and distributed. Something has happened that ensures nobody even wants to read it. And then something happened that even if you do read it, you won't understand it. Evidenced by 500 different religions read the same story, the same book. It's like I write a story and I read it to 450 people, and then I say to them, okay, would you please tell me about the story, what I just told you? And they all tell me something different. What's going on there? Something strange is going on there. So using my brain again, I read the book on law. It's just called the book on law. As I'm reading through the book, I start seeing things that are completely contrary to what I believed was in there from my limited religious experience. I mean, I didn't know hardly anything that was in there. Then I started finding things that are contrary to our laws and legal system. Ooh. So I read the whole book, start to finish, twice. Many of the things I thought was stupid or wrong in our legal system, the book on law agreed with me. I actually got some confirmation from a guy who claims to know everything. Wow, I finally find someone who agrees with me. But most importantly, he confirmed for me the truth of what I was finding and thinking. It turns out I'm not nuts after all. As I started carefully studying the law, I realized that our whole system of jurisprudence is a complete counterfeit from top to bottom. It also took me some time to understand the effects of this. And believe me, they're not good. This whole thing about, oh, you're supposed to obey the law of the country or the state, and unless it conflicts with the law of God, and then and that's what the court's bullshit. It's a lie. That's what our law says. It's not what his law says. So when you stop believing everything you think you know, look at all the evidence and proof hiding around you, your education will begin. Is it possible that the book is the real Constitution, and any law that is unconstitutional has no force or effect? That's something to think about. Go back and learn what religion is. Even the Supreme Court declared that God cannot have anything to do with religion. Your religion is a creature of the state, a person. Otherwise, your right to freedom of religion or free religious exercise would trump the rule of law. Wake up. You've been deceived. Then I thought to myself, it's just a book. Then I thought to myself, what has been done to me subliminally that I would never read it? And nobody does. The same one you're probably having, the same reaction. Today, if you quote God as an authority on anything, it is contrary to public policy, right? Because it stands opposed to a free and democratic society. It is called hate speech. Many people claim to quote something about God, and the reporters or whatever attack them. Why don't they just turn and say, it's not my opinion. Take it up with God. It has nothing to do with me. Then, when I actually found out that it is this book that is used to swindle us, wow, what a discovery. If you think the swindler is a genius, he is not. He only read about it and he's put it into action. Where did he read about it? In the written Constitution, the book. The swindler, the fraudster, the deceiver uses this authority to swindle you because there is none higher. And you too can use it and the authority in here to reclaim your birthright. The deceiver uses the law to keep you ensnared in captivity. No man is more enslaved or ensnared than a man who thinks he is free. Remember, your birthright is your greatest possession. The knowledge to reclaiming it is in this book. Now let me tell you about life. You won't believe this. The life protected in your Constitution is not your life. Your state cannot give you life. You gave the state life. Your right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, or here in Canada, security of the person, your right to life is not life. It's a kind of life. But it's not a living life. Let me read this to you. This comes from Black's Law Dictionary. The word life. It says, that state of animals, humans, and plants are of an organized being in which natural functions and motions are performed or in which organs are capable of performing their functions. That's life. That's real life. Human life begins at conception. Really? But the stage of pregnancy of a woman determines the conditions under which she may be entitled to an abortion free of state interference. Roe versus Wade and all the other things. Then it says life, in quotations. Protected by the federal constitution includes all personal rights and their enjoyment of the faculties, acquiring useful knowledge, the right to marry, establish a home, and bring up children. Freedom of worship, conscience, contract of occupation. Now, that all sounds good, right? The life that's protected is the state-created life. Life that came from the state. Not your real life. Show ya. Turn to natural life in Black's Law Dictionary. Natural life, the period of a person's existence, considered as continuing until terminated by physical dissolution or death occurring in the course of nature. That's life. Used, that life is used in contradistinction to that juristic and artificial conception of life as an aggregate of legal rights or the possession of a legal personality, which could be terminated by civil death. That is the extinction of personality which resulted from being attainted of treason or felony. This is the life your Constitution protects. You are giving your life to something that's not life. It is a juristic and artificial conception of life as an aggregate of legal rights or the possession of a legal personality. That's the only life your state, your country can guarantee you the right to life. The right to life, period. Not your real life. So, you people opposed to abortions? Hope you heard that carefully. People on death row should listen to this also. But it's your conviction. What are you going to do about it? The conception of life that you anti-abortionists are trying to protect is not the conception of life your Supreme Court is ruling on. It's not possible. It's not within their jurisdiction. You have been deceived. You are confused. Your whole legal system is a forgery and counterfeit from top to bottom. Your being, your voice, your face, your life, your money, everything counterfeit top to bottom. It's all fraud. But you're the fraudster. You've been deceived into committing the fraud. Nobody forced it on you. You're deceived basically by the masters of confusion. They run our societies. Remember, there's a subtlety to all this. It's hard to grasp. Now, I'm going to end the confusion videos with these statements. Just a couple statements here. You live in the Constitution of all that there is. This is the Constitution of all that there is. This book is not the Constitution. No. What you live in is the Constitution. This book is merely the written Constitution of all that there is. There is no more creation. That's it. It's finished. Of all that there is. Man is a constituent member of the Constitution. Not by choice or by free will, but by conception of life. There is nothing you can do about it. You are a constituent member. Except be deceived. That's what you can do about it. Excuse me. You have no hope of understanding the Constitution until you can grasp the conception of life and death. Life is a mystery. Even I can't explain it. But the conception of life and death is something that is within your grasp. Life can never die. It is impossible. Why? Because it exists. Life is life. Life can only leave or depart from a thing that holds life. Then the thing is dead. The thing has no life. The Constitution that you believe you are a member of has no life. It is dead. The constituent members are persons, and the human person is as airy as the fairy ones. That's a very old statement. It is just make-believe and a conception you hold. It is your thinking, your speaking, and your acting that appears to give life to the dead, and you do not even know you are doing it. That is the end of the confusion programs. I hope you will join me in the unraveling programs. It could change your life. Till then, my name is Marcus.
I hoped you enjoyed tonight's podcast. My live podcast will continue next Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Servant King. Hi, my name is Marcus. Marcus will continue to explore our confusions of things. Mind, being, voice, face, law, things, money, and God. Again, you can always come back to listen to this podcast and all of my podcasts from my main website, awaken-us.org, under podcast/videos. Reviews and comments can be emailed to us at awakenus@yahoo.com. Also, visit my main website to purchase my book, He Lives the Living Testimony, second edition with added preference and edited back cover, and other uplifting items such as the Creator poster, the Natural Laws poster, and do enter to win a free copy of my book. Winners are named every 3 months, along with more information on upcoming shows, events, podcasts, and book signings. I will now accept any callers to the show. Dial 516-531-9476. That's 516-531-9476. Press 1 to speak with me. And do tell a friend.
Just to take a stand, the greater plan, the creator's plan. Let's all rise like the day began. Reach out in touch with the Savior's hand. On rock we stand like his native land. Let the ways of love be the ways of man.